Right now with me is this week's pundit, a largely libertarian thinker with a 3D shirt on. It's making me giddy, from the New Zealand Initiative, Eric Crampton. Kia ora, Eric.
Good evening.
Welcome back to Nights.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It is 3D, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's got that 3D fuzziness. If I had 3D glasses, your chest would be leaping out at me.
Yeah, I love this shirt. I only wear it on days that I don't have external meetings normally, but I didn't have time to change for your benefit today.
Oh, don't worry about that. It's quite a novelty. I don't think I've interviewed somebody with a 3D shirt on before. I would be thinking it would be a really good prank if it was an alien coming out of your chest. That could be quite effective. But that's a whole different story. Now, you were on Morning Report the other day, weren't you?
Yeah, we were talking about the report that we put out last week, taking some policy lessons from the Christchurch earthquake experience, and largely around the recovery period. So we were not really looking at the civil defense response, but more about government's preparedness for the rebuild after an event. So making sure that policies are in place so that cities are able to recover as quickly as possible. I'd lived through the Christchurch earthquakes. Yeah. We were based there. And at least for us, it was at least as depressing watching the avoidable policy mistakes that central and local government were making all of the way through as the initial earthquake was. The initial earthquake was terrible and terrible fatalities. There's important work there to be looking at building strengthening and that kind of stuff. But the response period dragged out for years longer, or the recovery period for years longer than it really needed to have been through, well, mistaken policies and bad prior planning. And we can avoid that for the next one.
So as you said, you're not talking about the civil defense response to any of these. What you're talking about is what central and local government did then, subsequent to the disasters, to rebuild.
Yeah.
Right?
So
and enable other people to rebuild as well.
That's right. So there were a series of errors that were made after the Christchurch earthquakes. And I guess the big overarching lesson that we drew from it, so this was a joint report between myself and Bryce Wilkinson with Jason Krupp. The lesson that we'd drawn was that government completely failed to get the importance of regime certainty after something like an earthquake. So regime certainty is a term that economists will use sometimes for scenarios where people basically understand the rules of the game and then can organize their lives around them. Regime or policy uncertainty is what you have when nobody can quite figure out what the rules are because they keep shifting, or you can't get certainty about who will come to a decision, or there are too many people who can tell you no. When you're in that kind of a world, it's really hard to get on with your life, whether you're a homeowner that's stuck in fights between EQC and your private insurer, or just trying to get your private insurer involved at all because you're still stuck in an EQC problem, or whether you're downtown and you're a business owner and nobody can tell you whether you're allowed to rebuild on site or not because they're still dreaming up a new revised city plan.
Is there anything that's more definite than slapping a red zone on part of the city? Which is what the government did.
Yeah.
It said, right, this area is so badly damaged, we're not going to rebuild here. That's certainty, isn't it?
Yeah, that part wasn't unreasonable. So there were areas that are just going to be too expensive to rebuild quickly, and the folks in the red zone were then able to get on with their lives. There were some problems in other parts of the red zone. If you look at Avoca Valley, you had areas there where the houses were totally repairable. There wasn't anything particularly wrong with the land, but they were worried about the risk of rock fall from further up in the hills. And I don't think that they'd adequately considered the options for fencing off some of the boulder fall. But that's not part of what we really get into in the report. It is more around insurance changes to make sure that people are able to get on with their rebuilds, policy changes in advance of an earthquake for thinking about a recovery agency. In Christchurch, after the earthquakes, the government legislated for the Canterbury Earthquake Recovery Agency. You need a recovery agency of that kind to try and coordinate between central and local government. But CIRA was stuck in the spot that they were trying to invent themselves at the same time as they were trying to deal with the recovery. There wasn't anything off the shelf there that had governance arrangements set up, procurement contracts, standard financial stuff. It wouldn't be that hard to set up legislation in advance saying, well, let's think about it now. Do we want to have it as effectively a government department that's reporting to the minister, or do we want to have it as a proper agency with a governing board that has a bit of commercial expertise on board so that we avoid creating problems for ourselves after the next one? get the governance structures in place, maybe even start shoulder tapping some people across different cities of who might be good to have on that kind of a board if something were to happen. And then if the earthquake comes, you pull the legislation off the shelf, fill in the name of the city that's going to need the recovery agency, and get it in place instead of having an agency that's trying to figure out how to do HR and figure out how to do all of their books at the same time as they're trying to deal with how to rebuild a city after an earthquake. You shouldn't be dealing with both of those problems at the same time.
What were the fatal flaws in terms of direction from central government? The basis of this seems to be that the private individuals and businesses did not have enough certainty, and that meant that they did not make decisions to rebuild or delayed them because they didn't know the environment they were rebuilding in.
Yeah, so that was a huge problem downtown. So after the earthquake, Christchurch Council decided that they should take the opportunity to re-envision downtown, and they had a fairly inclusive process, the share an idea process, where everybody gave their ideas about what they'd like to see in a revised downtown. Unfortunately, nobody really got central government involved in that conversation, and they were expecting that a fair bit of central government money was going to come in. That's not really setting things up for a scheme that's going to work. And it didn't work. So then the Minister Brownlee asked the CCDU, an arm then of CIRA, to come up with a new downtown revised blueprint. But the last time that we should be doing this kind of stuff is after a natural disaster. In Christchurch, there'd been long-standing gripes about how downtown was set up. You'd always hear complaints that it was too spread out, that it should be more constrained, it should be more like Wellington's downtown. But if you've always had these visions for redesigning downtown, set it out in the long-term plan for the city well in advance, saying, if a big disaster strikes, here's the kind of plan that we're going to be working from.
Wasn't a mistake, Eric, to even, because a lot of people got excited in the aftermath of the quake about, we've got this opportunity now to make this much better Christchurch than we had before. Was that a fallacy?
Well, it's dangerous working in that kind of environment without having a clear head about what the money on the table really is. So it encourages kind of blue sky thinking in a world of where you're pretending that there aren't going to be costs that are going to come in, and you're pretending that you have an almost unlimited budget. The bigger worry is that during that whole process, everybody who had real skin in the game, the people who owned downtown properties, they were all kind of on hold. And that might have mattered a little bit less for the first process because they're still going to be sorting out their insurance. But then it dragged on for another year after that, where they were coming up with the revised plan. A lot of folks had come up with, had settled with their insurer. And even after they'd settled the downtown plan, they'd just settled it by deciding, well, here's going to be an arts precinct and here's going to be a justice sector. But nobody quite knew whether there would be a convention center, where it was going to be, whether there was going to be a new stadium or not. Hotel owners, imagine you're a hotel owner in the arts precinct, and this happened to one of them. They'd settled with their insurer, they were ready to rebuild, but nobody could tell them whether they were allowed to rebuild because now it was decided that this was an arts precinct, and nobody knew whether you should have a hotel in an arts precinct.
Who was making those decisions, Sarah?
That was CCDU was deciding on the overall plan, and then CCDU and council deciding on what was going to be allowed in an arts precinct or not allowed in an arts precinct. Doing that kills downtown. It felt, for me at the university, like I'd played this city planning game when I was a kid. It's called Sim City. And in Sim City, this game started in the 90s and through the 2000s, you'd have natural disasters that would happen occasionally, like Godzilla might attack, or you get an earthquake. But you could always hit a pause button. And after an earthquake, you'd hit a pause button. You'd think about, okay, well, here's where all the damage is. Here's how I'm going to rezone. Here's where I'm going to put my stadium instead of where it was. I'd always had this bit that was wrong. You've got all the time in the world with a pause button in SimCity. But if you try pushing that button for a pause after a natural disaster, people flee. And it's no coincidence that the parts of downtown Christchurch that recovered quickest were the parts that were outside of that zone of control, where just the existing city plan stood and people were able to get on with things. So
was that also because there was less damage?
No, it's just one side of a line. It's just one side of a line. If you look at Victoria Street, that came back really quickly because it was outside of where central government and city council were saying nobody can do anything yet because we don't know what's going to be allowed. Victoria Street got on with it. And then down Lincoln Road and further out towards the airport. it wasn't the extent of the land damage. It was the extent of the government-induced planning uncertainty where you just couldn't get certainty. So one of the big focuses there is don't engage in this kind of a process after a disaster. If you wanted to always redesign downtown, do your proper democratic consultation on that well in advance. Get a mock-up of it in a provisional emergency plan that might be activated, or at least form a baseline for discussions afterwards. Maybe you find out that some of the land after disaster really doesn't end up being suitable. But at least you've got a framework there that says where the trunk infrastructure is going to go, where the roads are going to be, and whether there's going to be massive rejigging of where public infrastructure is or not. So that was one big problem. The insurance was another mess. And EQC, we can't blame EQC too much for this. They had warned in advance that they really shouldn't be the ones who'd be going in and doing the assessment after a natural disaster. So there was a review that had been undertaken, came out in 2008-2009, saying that their job should just really be cutting checks for damage, not
and
going
And who in. Should be doing the assessment? The private sector?
Your insurance assessor would go in, do the assessment, and then call on EQC for damage up to the cap. So it is basically then going to be like an insurance excess. Instead of it coming out of your pocket up to the value of your excess, it is coming out of EQC's pocket to the value of their cap. Instead, that was never actioned. And again, you can't really blame National too much for that, because it's one of those horrible things that's massively important but never urgent. National came in with that report, but also facing the great financial crisis. And then the earthquake happened. But we have the chance to fix that still. The government has taken some of this advice. Treasury was giving very similar recommendations that we're in line with. Treasury is recommending that the private insurers be the first port of call. So you're not stuck in that horrible scenario where you're fighting to prove to EQC that your damage is really far in excess of the cap, rather than EQC arguing that you're really 20,000 below. And you can't even talk to your private insurer until you've gone through those EQC hurdles. The Kaikoura earthquake that happened, they've trialed the new regime where private insurers go first and then call back to EQC for the first amount of damage cost. But that hasn't been formalized or evaluated yet. We need an evaluation to make sure that it's been as good as everybody's expecting it would have been compared to the Christchurch experience, and then formalize those relations between EQC and the private insurers so that everybody knows that that'll be the process for the next one. Because the last thing we want is one to hit in Wellington, and that hasn't been quite sorted yet, and we're back to Christchurch.
Well, how much of the insurance problems are to do with the market failure insurance in terms of it struggling to deal with the kind of demand put on it by this natural disaster, but also the increasing risk of natural disasters, say, coming with climate change?
Well, those are kind of separate issues. So there's a lot of work that still needs to be done thinking about how EQC will be dealing with rising sea levels and land damage and flooding, and then councils thinking about how they want to respond to that in zoning. But that's to one side.
But that's an issue, though.
Oh, for sure. But it's not the issue that we were looking at in this report. In this report, we're looking instead at how do you structure things so that people don't have a terrible experience, or make the experience as good as it can be given the circumstances. So private insurers are connected. All of our insurers in New Zealand, the big ones, are international companies that have access to reinsurance networks and can draw on assessors from all over the world, right? And instead, you had little EQC that is trying to hire ex-cops from Australia to do assessments of whether it met the terms of your insurance contract to rebuild as new, to cut holes in your bearers to make your floor level.
Did you look at how other similar cities, every disaster is different, had recovered from earthquakes to try, so you're not looking at Christchurch's experiences in isolation?
Well, Bryce had done a fair bit of work looking back at the Napier earthquake. We'd looked a little bit less internationally because the insurance situation here is very different than elsewhere. New Zealand is very heavily insured compared to other places, and that makes things a little different. In the Napier earthquake, they'd moved a lot more quickly to reestablish the commercial center. The governance structure was far more like a board, where they'd brought in a lot of people with local commercial expertise, and they sorted out what was going to happen for downtown pretty quickly so that people could get on with things. It didn't drag on for years and years and years of planning uncertainty about what was going to be allowed in new special areas.
Whose responsibility is it? Do we have to criticize the then national-led government which, and I mean, this was a disaster that nobody had had to deal with since Napier, really.
Yep.
It's the last time we had a natural disaster of this kind of impact on an urban area.
We're not really trying to blame anybody too much in this report. We're trying to instead point to what should be done to avoid the next one. And the lessons that we take there are that we should be getting central government setting off-the-shelf legislation as soon as possible.
So we don't have, as we had in the case of Christchurch, the February 22nd earthquake. Right, now we're going to have some of the labelling legislation. The legislation is there. It's just the name changes depending on where it strikes.
And the structure of the recovery agency. So in Christchurch, you had the CIRA reporting directly to the minister. We think a better structure might be having a proper board overseeing it rather than it going directly to the minister, and the board can be structured with a more diverse set of experience and have some locals on it that have a lot more local knowledge about business conditions. We think that that should be done fairly quickly. We think that the changes to EQC should be formalized fairly quickly. And
do you think, Eric, that in terms of you and your co-authors, that cities should already have a fair idea of what it is they're going to rebuild, how they'll rebuild, rather than waiting for an earthquake and then thinking, hey, we've got a chance to reconstruct the city. What shall we do? Should they be thinking about that before a disaster? Should they be thinking about that now?
I think that they shouldn't be thinking about it after a disaster unless they were giving a lot of thought to it before the disaster. So unless you've got those kinds of plans in place saying, well, we as a community have decided that we don't really like how we had things structured in downtown, and if something like a major earthquake happens, this is the kind of zoning that we would prefer. Fair enough. Trying to do that in a rush after an earthquake, when all the council staff are dealing with their own issues at home and trying to get their own houses rebuilt, everything's up in the air, and it's the worst time for trying to make those big changes because the capacity isn't there. Like a simple thing, the easiest simple thing that Christchurch Council could have done to alleviate the housing crisis that followed after the earthquakes was to allow secondary suites. So everywhere in Wellington, you've got people who live upstairs and they rent out, they've built an apartment downstairs in their house, they rent it out, and the renters help pay your mortgage. Very common, illegal in Christchurch. After the earthquake, there was a huge housing shortage. My neighbor had people living in their back shed, and neighbors on the other side, there were people in the garage. It was pretty bad. And Christchurch Council could not organize itself to make the simple move to make it legal for somebody to build a kitchen downstairs and a house that's too big. And it would have been a lot easy, right? It was hard
What was standing in the way of that? Was it bureaucracy, or was it just some people in a position of power who resisted that and said, no, not in my city?
It'll be a bit of both. So bureaucratic inertia, where everybody is hunkering down, trying to stick to business as usual processes because there's comfort in doing business as usual. And the usual Christchurch complaint against having secondary units, which was wealthy people in Islam and Fendleton not wanting to have students anywhere near them. They would be very happy to walk their little dogs around the university campus, but very unhappy to have any student neighbors. But for sake of preventing some rich people in Fendleton and Islam from having to deal with more neighbors than they would have liked, I had people next door living in a shed.
Is it possible that you've brought out this report too soon? And by that I mean that maybe if we go back to the whole idea that here is an opportunity and people embrace this, of rebuilding Christchurch to make it better than it was before, to make it a model city. And people look at Napier and say, look what happened to the earthquake in Napier, and they came out and reborn, like Phoenix rising from the ashes in this Art Deco splendour. That in a few years' time, because it's taken a while to get the proverbial sorted out, Christchurch will end up being better.
If the redesigned downtown is that much better, it would still be that much better had the prior thought gone into it well before the earthquake, set in writing ahead of time, and then not had the years of uncertainty afterwards. You don't have to wait for the earthquake to come to have that process. You can set it in advance.
Eric, it's been great talking to you again.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for joining us.
No problem. Thank you.
Eric Crampton from the New Zealand Initiative.